This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hello there, my friend. How you doing today?
Well, I'm pretty good. I'm inside, and the sun is not beating down on my head in that 70, what, 8 degrees?
70, yeah, somewhere in that genre.
Yeah, so my truck said 74, so yeah. I was just trying to be a little
sophisticated.
Sophisticious. How's that?
It works.
Yeah, it's a combo. Yeah. Well, welcome to the Garden Show, and thank you for listening. And if you have any questions as we go along, please call 673-4464, and we'll get you on the air, and you can ask your questions, and hopefully I can answer what you want.
That can't be right. It says 67 there. That's not
no,
right.
No, 67. No, it's hotter than 67.
Yeah.
But at any rate, this show is all about gardening hints and good advice and what you can do and what you can't do and what you should look out for and be aware of, all those kinds of things. But any question is fair game, and no matter what I'm talking about, you can ask your question, and we'll get you an answer. So here we go. You know, like one of the biggest challenges we have as gardeners, especially here in Douglas County, are critters that eat our landscapes and our gardens, you know.
I mean, yes, sir.
I've never met anybody that didn't have some animal damage or insect damage of some sort.
You talk about our little deers?
Oh, little baby Bambis, yes. And some eat entire plants in one night, you know, i.e. the deer. And the deer, of course, are the most visible and bold. They just kind of jump any old fence and get right in there. So your fences should be really high. And they jump them in a single bound, and then they eat your garden in one night right down to the dirt. A single what?
Bullet would take care of that.
Well, that's true. But and they even eat deer-proof plants. You know, I read all these books, and they say, well, these are the deer-proof plants, uh-huh. And these are the deer-proof this. And so I try it out, and somebody made a mistake writing the book. But here's the deal. However, forget the deer for a minute. We know that we can see them. However, there are these little tiny bugs that can do great damage over a long period of time. And the problem is that you can't see them until your plants start to show extreme damage. And you go, what in the world is chewing on my stuff? Why is those perfect tomatoes looking unperfect now? Or those...
We got little holes in them.
Yeah, holes in the leaves. And they're kind of looking strange and ugly. I don't know. So who are these little plant eaters? Yeah, aphids is one. Mm. Aphids are, you know, they love roses too, but they like anything that's green. You know, they'll just jump on it and eat it. But these aphids, they have these small, soft bodies, and they're white usually. Ew. And they cluster together on the leaves and the stems, and usually they're on the underside of the leaf, so you can't see them. They're hiding and eating
on the underbelly.
They're in the underbelly. They're taking the guts right out of the plant. And what they do is they suck the sap from the stems and the leaves. They just bore into them and then just withdraw the sap and from the stems and the leaves, and then they stick their beaks where they don't belong to extract the sap from the new growth, which contains the most sap, and it's also fresh.
Oh, that's kind of...
Yeah, they're pretty smart little critters, and they're small, and they're white, little tiny things. So you're wondering, well, how do I spot this damage early on? Well, look for leaves or stems that, you know, they kind of leave them behind, and they leave behind this stuff called honeydew. It's kind of a white substance. And then the ants come along and feed on the honeydew. Mm. So when you have aphids, you also have ants. We got a call?
We do have a call. Okay. Hey, good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike.
Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon.
I have a question about phormiums.
About who?
I've got a phormium plant.
Phormium plant. I'm not familiar with that. Is it indoor or outdoor?
They call them flax as well, but New Zealand flax, I think they call them.
Okay.
and they have those long, spiky leaves.
Uh-huh.
And certain pockets, some of the leaves, they have this kind of a powdery white, almost like a white fly deposits mm-hmm. on there. And I'm wondering, how do I determine what that is, and how do I treat them?
Well, it sounds like one of these microscopic critters that I'm talking about. It could be aphids or something along those lines, leaf borers, who knows. But have you gone out at night with like a flashlight and shined a flashlight down on the leaves to see if you see any activity?
I haven't done that, no.
Well, that's a good way to, you know, wait till dark, go out with a flashlight, and then shine that light around. That's when they come out and start chomping or doing whatever they're going to do to your plant. And if you see it, there are kind of general insecticides that will take care of that. And the best place to go that I know of that has the largest selection would be the co-op. And they've got about probably 15 different varieties of insecticides. And read the labels to see what matches what you saw, and then go ahead and spray your plants. And in the meantime, you have to be a detective and look for the clues.
Mm-hmm.
So that's.
You think it could be white fly though?
It could be, but do you ever see any white fly on it?
No, I see it. I don't see the white flies. I don't see any around the plants at all flying either.
Uh huh. But you've not inspected them after dark, have you?
No.
Well, try that first and see if, because you, normally, not, I don't know, not normally, but a lot of these little tiny critters only come out at night and where they actually mm-hmm. are active. And so if you're out there with your flashlight, check several of your plants and see what you can come up with. And look on the undersides of the plants as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I will. Good
okay.
advice. Thank
and
you.
If you have success, call me back, okay?
I will.
Okay, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
You're
all
welcome.
Right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That's how easy it's done.
Well, you know, it's a lot of these things only come out at night. You know, they feel it's safe at night. Nobody's out there checking them out, right? They
right,
don't know about
right.
flashlights and stuff yet. So.
It reminds me of someone I used to know.
No, don't tell the story on the air. But anyway, I was talking about the aphids and the honeydew and that kind of thing. And then when they leave this honeydew stuff, it's kind of a white, waxy-looking material.
Gross-looking.
Well, it's not gross. It's just kind of a white, thin stream, you know. And then the ants are attracted to that because it's sweet, I guess.
Mm.
And the ants, you know, they'll start getting on that, and they make a mess too.
Sure.
So some other bug will come along and eat the ants, and then you really got a problem. So.
And there you go.
Yeah, it's a never ending cycle of attacks on your plants.
The chain of love.
Right. And another sign of aphids is black mold that will occur on
I've
your plants.
Seen that.
Yeah. And they form on the leaves with the honeydew. So when you see that, you see either of these clues, you know that you have aphids and you should take care of them. There are aphid sprays and you follow the directions exactly. Don't try to, you know, double up the dose and think you're going to do a good job because you may hurt your plants.
Yeah.
And And like I told the gentleman on the phone, there are insecticides that are going to help you keep those aphids in control to an extent. There's only probably 20 trillion of them on this earth, I guess, and they're a never-ending thing. But, you know, just get rid of them as often as possible without hurting your plants. And early in spring, you should do it before the summer heat if you can. And when you spray in the early morning or after sundown or, you know, when the sun is not beaming hot so as not to burn the leaves of whatever plants that you're spraying. And aphids love roses, of course. But they'll infect any plant that's handy.
Mm-hmm.
They're not particular in the plants. But roses are like their favorite. And if you don't like to use an insecticide, then spray the leaves or stems with water from a high-pressure nozzle with water. Just you have to do it more often. But what you do is you knock them off. You know, you got that nozzle and turn it on to a high spray, not the highest spray where you damage the plant, but a good fan spray, and just get right down there and kind of clean out the plant. And that will disturb their cycle a bit, and just kind of check on them on a regular basis. And some people don't like insecticides. I don't blame them. I don't much care for them either. I don't know. You know what you're
getting.
Eating.
Yeah, I was thinking of vinegar. I suppose that didn't help.
I don't know. I didn't see anything when I was doing my research about vinegar.
Yeah,
but it may be good. But I don't know what it does to the plant.
Oh, okay.
See, it may knock out the aphids or whatever. But
do the plant too.
Yeah. But here's another favorite, slugs and snails. Slugs and snails, they love gardens.
Mm.
And you can track them, you know, fairly easily because they leave a slime trail. And they like cool, shady, and moist places, and they feed mainly at night.
Perfect.
Yes. And so that's another thing. Now, vinegar would probably work on the slugs and the snails because they're a big target. And you can knock them on the ground, or you can step on them. But if you step on too many, you know, you're the soles
slip sliding away.
Yeah, there you go. But they will devour your garden in a hot minute if you don't get rid of them. And they eat the leaves, the stems, the flowers, and the roots. I mean,
the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, the whole thing, if you don't stop them. What? And if you don't stop them, then they increase in numbers. And they have little baby slugs that need to eat. And then they bring in the relatives from down the street.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Let's bring the whole family.
Yeah, bring the whole family, baby. But they'll eat those leaves, the stems, the flowers, the roots. And you're thinking, what the heck is going on with my plants here? What's getting them? And in small young seedlings, you know, the kind that you buy early in the spring and you plant, and there's, you know, an 8-inch tomato plant or some onions or whatever you're planting, those are their favorite snack because they're tender.
Oh, of course.
They're tender and new, so they don't have a tough skin, if you will.
No.
and he'll go right after them because they're kind of hungry after the winter.
You got to fill it up.
Yeah, and if you don't see the slugs, one of the signs to look for are holes in the leaves. And, of course, you know, look on the ground and look under the plant because they may be resting, if it will, under the plant. Just kind of move the leaves aside. And if you're not squeamish, just pick them out and throw them out in the street or something. Let somebody run over them or throw them in the garbage or do something with them.
Pour a ton of salt on them.
Well, salt will work, yeah, but I don't know how much damage that might do to a plant if it's on a plant. If it's not on a plant, yeah, salt will take care of them in a hot minute. Ooh, they just shrivel up. I don't know if they have any feelings or not.
I hope so.
But after the salt attack, man, they got feelings in all the wrong places.
Should we take a break on that
note? Let's take a break.
Okay. We'll be right back with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show here on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty, it's 4:22. More of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show right now on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And what I'm speaking about today, or the first part of today, is the little critters out there that like to eat you out of house and home in your garden or your shrubs and those kinds of things.
We're not talking about grandchildren.
No grandchildren allowed there. But, you know, finishing up with slugs, like I said, they're the best way, the easiest way and the quickest way is to maybe have a little shovel and you can just pick them up and then fling them into the garbage or something like that and actually eliminate them. Or as my colleague here said, pour salt on them, you know, and watch them shrivel up.
Yeah. Gives you some kind of good feeling,
I think. But, you know, actually some folks think they're very tasty and find them tasty at garden parties, so I don't know.
Are you serious?
No, that was a joke.
Oh, I was hoping it was, but I don't think you were joking. Ugh.
Well, I'm not really, but that's a different story.
Escargot, is that where that comes from?
Well, no. Almost. Okay, the third little critter that I want to speak about here are the mealybugs, and it's spelled M-E-A-L-Y-B-U-G-S. It's one word, mealybugs. They have like a wood-like body. It looks... It's distinctly segmented, and they're covered in wax. I mean, they're trying to be indestructible. And the adult females have no wings, and the males have two sets of wings. So I don't know what that means, but that's the way they are.
Hmm.
And they are small, and they only get to be a fifth of an inch long. So they're very hard
to
see.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Very hard to see, but they can be very destructive to your garden because they are sap suckers as well. They suck all the sap out of the plants. And, you know, I guess tomatoes are their favorite. I'm not sure. Ugh. But they can reduce your plant growth and cause leaf drop and branch dieback. And in other words, when you're out there looking, you can say, well, why are the leaves falling off? Or why does that branch look a little bit shriveled?
Yeah.
Well, start looking around underneath the leaves and turning your leaves over and see if you can see these little microscopic bugs and get rid of them. And on any of these critters, control comes from early detection and eradication. That's the only way you're going to control it. You can't just plant it and walk away from it and just water it and say that's good. Mm. You got to keep an eye on it. And it's more difficult, believe it or not, it's more difficult to grow a garden in a town where there's a lot of houses in neighborhoods,
sure.
side by side. Well, you might start out with a good clean slate, but your neighbor next door is not paying attention to his garden and the insects that are devouring his garden.
Yep.
And when they get tired of his place, they come on over to your place. So, you know, early detection, keep an eye on it and take care of it, you know, immediately as soon as you see it, and you're going to be okay and the plants are going to survive. Because even if they eat a couple of leaves, the tomato plants or onions or string beans or anything like that, they produce more leaves very quickly. I mean, they're growing all over the place, you know, they just go for it.
Yeah. They probably have to.
Yeah. But chemical sprays seem to be the most effective and because they cover a good area. But like I said earlier, high pressure hosing several days in a row will keep the populations low. And just hose down all the leaves and just go back and forth a few times. And, you know, at least if there's anything there, you're knocking it off. If they've laid any eggs, you're knocking that off and killing that with the high pressure spray on your hose.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and if you do use a pesticide, make sure you follow the directions because a double dose is not good. You know, you think, well, I'm going to kill every critter in there and I'm going to make sure. So I'm gonna, instead of 2 tablespoons, I'm going to put 4 tablespoons of the mix in there.
Yeah.
But that's going to be detrimental to your plant growth too. Especially you know, if the sun comes up and it's in 89 or 91 degrees the next day, because you still have some of that residue spray on there, and the sun, a hot sun like that, will cause damage to the leaves. So
kind of burn it or whatever?
Yeah, it'll burn it.
Yeah.
So you do it, you know, in the evening is best because that's when the bugs come out. And it's best because it's cooler and it's shadier and the sun's not beating down on everything. Mm-hmm. And you can get a good coverage that way. And there's usually no wind at night. You know, after the sun drops and it's starting to get dark, the wind kind of ceases. But follow the directions. You know, like I say, too strong of a dose is going to give you more damage, and you're not going to like it.
So too much is not a good thing.
Yeah. It's not. Now, here's, and I've spoken about this in the past, too. One way to keep bugs and other pests to a minimum is not to overplant your landscape or your garden. Spacing is critical.
Nah.
Because when they all grow together, you put them too close, they grow together, you can't really see anything happening.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's some critter eating on your garden or your shrubs, you don't notice it until they've done so much damage that, oh man, it's a real mess. Then you're pruning and shaping, or even pulling them out and starting all brand new.
And they're flying all over the place.
But
whatever.
Exactly. But the cause of that is planting plants too close.
Right.
You know, give them space. Give them room for air circulation all the way around, and that will help to keep them at bay, or at least you can see them when they get in there, and they're not going to lose the whole crop for.
Don't give those little buggers coverage.
Right, you just don't want them touching. Many times at the nursery, people are buying hedge plants or something like that, and they say they want 20 of a certain kind of hedge plant, and I show it to them, and I say, well, how large of an area are you going to plant these in? Oh, we got about a 30-foot span against our fence, and they're buying 20 plants to put in a 30-foot expanse, and these particular plants that they're looking at for privacy, etc.
Yeah.
They're going to grow 6 feet wide, for crying out loud. If they,
ouch.
You know, exactly. And once you explain that to them, say, well, you should space them out at least 5 feet apart. And they say, well, we want a screen. I said, believe me, in 3 years, you're going to have a good screen, especially if they're small plants. Take about 3 years to get up there.
Mm-hmm.
But and explain to them why it's important for that air circulation and sunlight to hit all parts of the plant, or as much of it as is exposed. And that will help to keep that's a natural way to help keep the critter population at bay.
don't give them a hint.
Yeah, don't give them a home
right off
the bat. It's not home on the range, man. It's a home in your backyard. Oh, golly. But And if you do that, and if you've overplanted, the more vegetation you have in your yard, the more plant pests you will have in your yard, because it's like going to Costco. It's like, whoa, look at all this stuff. Let's eat. I know. That's how I feel when I go to Costco. Man, look at all this. This is cool.
Oh, there's a word for it, but I can't think of it.
I can't either. So good spacing allows you to see a problem before it becomes an epidemic.
Yeah.
All right?
All right.
That's the bottom line there. And keeping plants pruned, people sometimes are afraid to prune. Oftentimes they're afraid to prune. But as plants get larger, you keep them pruned. And this is also going to prevent major, pest invasion because you're pruning. And pruning is not just pruning the tops. It's kind of thinning some of the branches in the middle where the leaves are the thickest.
Yeah.
And where the leaves are the thickest, that's where you're going to find the bugs or the critters that are eating on your landscape.
Where the sun don't shine.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly correct. But so thin some of those interior branches out. Again, that allows air circulation and some sunlight in there.
Yeah.
And it also gives you visibility. And if you see, you can easily see into the plant if there are some of these small bugs that are attacking your expensive plant materials.
Mm-hmm.
That's
no fun.
And again, if you don't want to use this pesticide, do the high pressure hose thing and do it once a week to wash out all the bugs or the eggs or anything like that. And once you break the cycle, you're going to be free for a while. It's not going to, they're not going to continue. Maybe the next year you might have to do it again.
Yeah.
But at least that's
there won't be as many, maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's like the organic way to do it. Just wash them, just rinse them hard and knock off all the little things that are growing in there, so that it has a chance to mature.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Well, of course it does.
you know what you're talking about.
I think I do. I'm not sure. I don't. Why do you hire me here?
Oh, but you're hired?
Yeah.
I
work cheap. But using a pesticide only, again, when it's cool and cloudy, early morning or after the sun sets, and if you spray on a hot day, like I said earlier, you can damage leaves and damage the plant and maybe even kill it. But then make sure that you follow all the directions to the letter. Don't think a double shot's gonna work better.
Better,
yeah. It'll kill the bugs, but it'll also damage your plant.
Do the plant and do.
Yeah.
Alrighty, should we do it again?
Yeah.
Here we go, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. What's our phone number? We haven't given that out for a while.
673-4464.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we're back.
Yes, and I've been speaking about the little creatures that like to eat your yard and your garden and your plants and your trees, and trying to give you some easy hints about how to get rid of them and control them. And one thing we Dale and I were discussing during the break is that neighborhoods where houses are, you know, fairly close to one another, oftentimes you may be taking really good care of your garden.
Yeah.
And maybe down the street or next door, the person that's having a garden there is not taking as good a care of theirs. And so oftentimes you get a multiplicity of these different insects and plant eaters that will migrate from one yard to the next.
They like to share.
Yeah, they like to share. Yeah, Bob's place was good. He had some good cauliflower.
You know? Have you tried that yet?
Yeah. But, you know, it's just a common sense kind of thing. You got to watch out for them, and you may... You know, and the master gardeners here in Douglas County, they've got quite an establishment out there at River Forks Park. They have a nice landscaped area that's beautiful, and then they have a vegetable garden as well. And they may have some hints, too, outside of what I've been telling you. And, you know, master gardeners, you can call the extension, OSU extension agent here right in Roseburg. It's right next to the courthouse. And talk to them about it, and they may have some of the newest information out there that will help you control these wild little critters that like want to eat you out of house and home. Okay, now fall I think is coming. I think it was cloudy most of the day.
It was
until I got here. It seems like the sun came out in Roseburg.
You told me the sun was out. I didn't know. I've been
and I'm thinking, I get this kind of mist on my windshield in the morning.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's not rain.
Yep.
It's just a foggy mist.
Yeah.
And the fog is so thick, the deer have to jump over my truck when I'm driving.
Is that good for deer hunting, that kind of weather? Or?
I guess. I don't know. I don't deer hunt.
I don't either.
So I eat cows.
There you go. We're beef men.
Yeah, we're beef men. We eat cows. fall is slowly descending upon us. I wish it would speed up with a couple of more rain showers, because the river, look at any of the rivers, especially the South Umpqua or even Deer Creek, and the poor thing is just kind of low.
Yeah.
I don't believe I've seen it that low. I mean, I pay attention to that. I worked in that field, if you will, many years ago before I started my business, but, measuring water and being I was in watershed management research at OSU, and taking water samples and temperatures of water and stuff like that. So I had a lot of experience in a number of streams. And just from driving over the bridge in town, you look down at the South Umpqua. I feel sorry for it. But, I hope the fish are okay, for crying out loud.
It's showing all its rocks.
It sure is, isn't it? Yeah. You know, it's amazing how many rocks. Wow, where did all those rocks come from? It came from lack of water. But anyway, so fall is creeping upon us. Again, some of the leaves and some of the trees are starting to turn into their gorgeous fall colors. But it's still fairly warm and dry. And the couple of items that you might have not thought of. But lawns, they need to be fertilized in the fall for your best results in the spring. And you want to do that because the fertilizer will kick in a little bit in the fall, but if the temperature drops, then the grass doesn't really need it, so it doesn't receive it. The roots will just kind of kind of hold it back, or it's very slow. But the thing is, when the spring comes, that unused fertilizer is still in the root zone. So mm-hmm. consequently, when spring finally arrives and it starts to get warm, your lawn is very green, very beautiful, very healthy, and that's something. It might look weak now. It look, you know, kind of brown spots or light tan because you don't have enough water to water it.
Don't worry, there's life below.
Yes, there is life below, and you think, well, it's not going to improve over the winter, but that's wrong. If you will fertilize and do thatching or aeration or any of those items that I've spoken about in the past, they will come back gangbusters in the spring, and they'll really, really look good. So a fall feeding of fertilizer is a good idea. It doesn't have to be a big one, just enough to kind of keep the lawn alive, if you will. And the same advice is good for shrubs and trees. You know, it's you just don't overdo the fertilizer. Just a light granular fertilizer, a light handful around small shrubs and a big handful around big, larger shrubs, and it's going to sit there until the rains actually hit and starts to put it into the soil and gets down to the root zone of the plant. And again, the plant is going dormant, so it's not absorbing and taking in the fertilizer.
Yeah.
And it'll kind of sit there in the root zone until spring comes, and then the plant kicks into high gear and says, wow, we already got a breakfast here. Let's eat it up and grow, baby.
Sits there in the friend zone for a long time.
Yeah, right. But it's good, and it will improve your shrubs. It will improve your lawn, and if you do it on a regular basis, you're going to be in good shape. You're going to have less problems, less weeds if you take care of your lawn that way. Your shrubs are going to be very, very healthy when they do grow again in the spring, and they're just waiting to get that midnight snack, if you will.
Yeah.
Now, if you still have weeds growing in your bark mulch or in your garden, this would be a good time. This would be a great time to give them a good spray with like Roundup or something along that line before they grow seeds. You know, you got fresh little weeds coming up because there's a certain part of your yard that you're watering in the flower beds or even in the lawn. But I'm speaking about garden areas and flower bed areas. And you're watering, and your rhodies or azaleas or roses are looking really good. But you already pulled the weeds twice this year, and you're tired of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's new ones still coming up. Yeah. Well, don't pull them. Just spray them. And when you spray them, be careful and make sure you get a good direct hit, and it goes down into the root system and it kills it. Once all those weeds are dead, then put about 2 or 3 inches of new bark mulch on top top dress it, and you're going to have less weeds the following spring. I mean, you're always going to have weeds in Douglas County, you'll have less. You'll be on top of it, and if you treat it with like some Casseron in between in early spring, it's a pre-emergent kind of thing that kills. It actually robs the oxygen when the weed comes up. There's no oxygen at that level, and the weed dies because there's no oxygen.
Can't breathe.
No, can't breathe, so it chokes to death.
Yeah, good enough.
There's a whole bunch of good things you can do that won't take you a lot of time. Excuse me, and it will be a benefit to your landscape. And if you're still like I say, have the weeds growing in that bark mulch, this is if you don't want to pull them. I mean, a lot of people like to pull them and you get the roots and all that, but you can spray them and it's a lot quicker and you don't have to get down on your hands and knees. So that's
at our age.
I do it still, but I can get down real good, but it's the getting up part is not so quick anymore.
I need a hand.
So preventive maintenance is the key to success in all of these endeavors in our gardens and in our yards. It's looking for the stuff that needs to be done, and don't hesitate. Get out there and do it, whether it's pruning, weeding, mowing, fertilizing, whatever it is.
Whatever it is, do it.
Get it done and then the winter will come in. You're not going to do anything for, you know, maybe 3 months, and then but you're ahead of the game for next spring.
And so are your plants.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool.
Now, if you have a problem with like blackberries or poison oak, that's
who doesn't?
Yeah, I know. I got a million plants of it on my place. I think.
Hey, we got a phone call.
Okay, we got a phone call.
Hey, good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
I was wondering, I'm going to ask the question and hang up, but if you could explain the fertilizer numbers, I can never remember them, and I want to know, I have never put fertilizer on my lawn in the fall.
Uh-huh.
I always do it in the spring. But I understand that the numbers are important, too. You know, they have like a 14, 12,
sure.
9 or something. And so if you'll answer that, I would appreciate that. And I just also wanted to tell you that I really appreciate the show.
Okay. All right. For lawns, there are turf fertilizers, and it'll say lawn fertilizer right on the package. And lawn fertilizers, there's always three numbers on every fertilizer package. The first one is always nitrogen, the second one is always phosphorus, and the third one is always potassium. Now, for lawns, it will be a high nitrogen number, maybe like 15 to 20% nitrogen. Mm. And then the phosphorus will be maybe 10%. And then the potassium might be 8 or 6%. That's a lawn food, and they you can get them as high as 20, 10, 10 or anything like that. But that's what that means. And the nitrogen is going to green up whatever it hits. It's going to get really green. But if you put too much nitrogen on there, it's going to get green then brown very, very quick.
Oh, I thought you were going to say white.
Yeah, well, it could turn white, too. Yeah, brown or white depends on the time of the year.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, on shrubs, it's kind of almost the opposite. Shrubs will have a lower nitrogen, maybe, say, 10%, whereas the phosphorus and the potassium might be 15 or 20%. So the lawns have a high nitrogen, that's the first number, and the shrubs have a low nitrogen number, which, is the first number. And they'll always be in plain sight on any bag of fertilizer or box of fertilizer that you buy. And and it works in the lawns, it works on shrubs, and also works in gardens and you know, edible things too.
Mm.
I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, I mean it makes sense to me.
And if it makes sense to you,
it's got to make sense to the caller.
Anyway, thanks for the call. I hope that helped you, and if it didn't, call me back. I'll try to explain it better.
This a good time for another break?
Sure, it is.
All righty, let's rock. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. More of the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show in just a minute and a half or less.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, that was a honey of a tale.
Yeah, they don't make honey, though. I'll tell you what, they make stings.
We're back with Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Okay, and I'm going to go back to lawns for just a second here. If your lawn is a little sparse right now, too, there's, browned up or whatever, or there's foot traffic or something like that, and there's some blank spots in the lawn, now's a great time to overseed, too, because it's not going to... I hope it's not going to be 90 degrees again. But, 75 degrees, and if you keep it watered, while the seed's germinating, it's going to help it to get strong. And then when the rains begin, you don't have to water anything. And by spring, all those bare spots is going to be filled in. And take advantage of that cool, wet weather and save on your water bill. And the growth will be slower, but it will fill in. At first, you're saying nothing's happening. It's fall. The sun is not up as long mm-hmm. as it normally is, and it's getting some moisture, but it will germinate.
It just takes a little longer.
Yeah, I've actually thrown seed out on my grass in November and December, and thinking, well, maybe that's wasted, but I had it, so I did it.
Yeah.
And by end of February, it was growing well. So yeah, it does work. It's
just
good.
Taking a nap.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if you have a problem with blackberries or poison oak,
I want to hear this.
Yeah, well, this is a great time to spray them because the most of the sprays that we use is to spray them after the fall starts, and for some reason you get a better hit on them. You don't do it in the spring. I've tried it in the spring, and they're still growing from the roots. They're coming back up, but at the tail end of the season, they're not going to be pushing new growth from the roots. So you spray them this time of year while we still got sun and warmth. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a good kill on them, and this is, like I say, this is a good time to do that, and just if you see any more come in the spring when they're small, hit them again. And that way, you might have to hit them two or three times, but that's the only way you can control them. I'm not going to dig them out. I've got a mile of road with blackberries and poison oak that I go by, and there's pasture land and all that. And I haven't sprayed in 2 years, and they've come back like gangbusters.
Oh, you betcha. Yeah, yep.
But back to the lawns now. If if your lawn is a little sparse, like I said, overseed it now. It will come in. It will do well. Don't hesitate. Get some seed, throw some fertilizer on there, and stand back and be patient. And the cool, wet weather is going to save you, like I say, a ton of dollars. Somebody was mentioning how much their water bill has gone up here recently. And, they've just got a normal yard. And
yeah.
I think all this inflation junk and everything else is all adding up against us.
Mm. But quickly.
Yeah, yeah. And the last reminder that I can give you today is that fall planting is the best time for planting new shrubs and trees because they're going into dormancy. They don't, you could even almost neglect them and they'll still do well because they're going dormant. And it's great simply because there's just little or no shock to the root system or to the plant because of the cooler temperatures the less daylight hours because they're not vigorously growing. So you might do a little damage, but you're it's not like if you did it in the middle of April or May. You can still, if you do it right, you'll have success. But if for the rookie gardener who buys a tree or some shrubs for his yard in the middle of May or June, you've got to be pretty exacting and quick in planting and getting them in the ground and making sure that the roots don't dry out. Whereas this time of year, you've got
the moisture.
You've got some moisture.
Yeah.
You've got some leeway there. I don't propose that you just take them out of the pot and lay them down on the ground with the roots in the air or anything like that, but there's less of a fatality rate in fall planting than there is in spring or summer planting. If you're experienced, you're good both ways, but for the inexperienced person, the new house and the first yard, that's kind of a thing to keep in the back of your mind.
Don't want to take any chances.
Yeah, because you spend some pretty good bucks, on a tree.
Oh, yeah.
A nice big tree is $100, $125. You know, something that's 10 feet tall with a 2-inch diameter.
Boy, that's a month's pay.
Oh, yeah, easy. Or an hour, one of the two.
Oh, I wish.
Yeah, right. Oh, gosh. But there's just, like I say, little or no shock to the plant. The plants are going into dormancy, and the roots won't become active till, like I say, March or April, at the beginning of spring. And then when you plant them, just water them real good one time, just to settle the soil and settle the plant in the hole. And you're done until April or May. You're not going to have to water until then.
Nice.
And new plants that you just put in, don't fertilize them. Let them go on their own for a couple of months and
get used to their surroundings, so to speak.
Yeah, maybe. And over fertilization on a new planting is more detrimental than anything else that I can think of.
Oh, okay.
So let them go for a while.
Yeah.
And when you do fertilize them, say with granular food or even a liquid stuff's not going to hurt them much because it's you can break it down. You know, 2 tablespoons of X liquid fertilizer with 2 gallons of water is not going to do much damage. But
okay.
It's not going to have, well, not only does it not do much damage, it doesn't
do much
for the plant either.
Yeah, so it's semi-wasting your time.
Yeah. So spring rolls around, you start watering in May, and in a normal year, you can, like I say, you can get by with 4 or 5 months without watering and playing the gardener with a hose dragging around your yard and looking at what's alive, what's dead, what needs water, that kind of thing. So
yeah.
Those are some basic tips and hits that you know, I've learned from my mistakes over the years. And
you made mistakes?
I made 2,000 or 3,000 of them. But
including bee stings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't want to tell anybody that one. But anyway, I got hit by 5 yellow jacket stings day before yesterday, and I'm still alive. How's that?
Yeah, his arm looks probably looks better than it did yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday was dark purple.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, can't do that our age.
No, you can't do it at any age for crying out loud.
True.
And like I say, old Terry Tinker, he was up the slope from me. He got it worse than I was. He was hollering and screaming and running around and waving his arms.
You said he stepped on him.
He stepped right on the nest.
Oh,
I walked over it. I walked right over the top of the nest. I mean, you couldn't tell there was a nest there.
Yeah.
And then he was walking down behind me, and bingo, right in the center of it.
He hit the jackpot.
He got the jackpot.
Wow. Where are you located at?
Oh, we're south of Winston, a half a mile on Highway 99. Look for the big green roofs, and we'll help you out.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.